वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचानोरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं. सो दिस टाइम द टॉपिक फॉर दिस रिट्रीट is supposed to be the 15th chapter, but as an introduction to this 15th chapter, we will also very briefly discuss the 14th chapter, which is called Gunatraya Vibhaga Yoga. Now, in any good scripture or in any book, there is a rule that if the book is divided into several chapters, there must be a sangati or a connection, a relationship between the previous chapter and the next chapter. This is one of the conditions imposed in any good literature and especially in the scriptures. There is a technical word for that. It is called sangati. Sangati means the relationship between the previous verse and the next verse, the previous chapter and the next chapter. There must be a relationship. Then only it makes a meaning. Now, 14th chapter is naturally succeeded by the 13th chapter. So the 13th chapter, as you know, is titled as Kshetra Kshetragna Vibhaga Yogo Nama Prayodasho Adhyaya. The distinction between Kshetra and Kshetragna. Why was this chapter very important? In our experience, whenever we have an experience, we have these two elements, the subject and the object. The moment we mention one word, subject or object, a relationship kicks in. How? If you say, this husband, how can a man be husband unless he has a wife? Or if you say, this is a wife, this is a son, this is a mother, this is a father, this is an officer, this is a teacher, there must be, it automatically implies that there is a relationship. So every object in this world is a mixture of these two, subject and object. And this mixture is what leads to bondage. So the separation has to do. We use a word, viveka. Viveka means the discrimination between what is not related. What is not related, real and unreal. Usually we use that word, real and unreal. But that's technically, it's not a correct translation. Because there is no relationship between real and unreal. The real and the unreal, in reality, never gets connected. Because unreal is not there at all. Then what is it that gets connected? Reality and partial reality. Reality and partial reality. That is what is called bondage. When you know the rope fully, you have no problem. If there is no rope but only snake, there is no problem. But if you mistake a rope for a snake, then there is a problem. This problem comes because it is a mixture of reality and unreality. So, in Vedantic explanation what we say. Supposing instead of rope there is an elephant, would you mistake it for a snake? Only it must be something appearing, resembling a rope. Anything that is resembling a rope can be mistaken for a snake, and anything resembling a snake can be mistaken for a snake. That's why they say a crack in the ground. It is a twisted crack. And those who mistake, that's why they are called
crack.
That is how the word crack has come. I don't know. It just thought came to me. But there must be a resemblance. Should be there. So there is a resemblance between the rope and the snake. Similarly, there must be a reality, a resemblance to reality. In fact, we can only mistake reality. We can never mistake unreality. If there is something, how are you going to ever mistake it? A rope is constantly existing reality. But we mistake it for something else. So what is this universe? In the 13th chapter, it is kshetra, kshetrajna combination. So the kshetrajna thinks I am the kshetra, and the kshetra thinks I am the kshetrajna. Somehow this mixture is what we call myself, yourself, this carpet, this room, this world, etc., etc. So it is very nicely, I don't know, did I take that class in 13th chapter? So I hope that you remember what we have discussed. At the end of the chapter, the Lord declares, whatever object exists in this world is the outcome of the result of Purusha and Prakriti. Now what is bondage? Bondage is that we neither understand Purusha completely, nor understand Prakriti completely, because if you know what is Purusha, then you have no problem.
Yeah.
And if you know what is Prakriti in reality, then also we have no problem, because Prakriti is nothing other than
Purusha
only.
Yeah.
Or to put it in yogic terminology, consciousness plus what is called an object. When there is an object, when the consciousness goes and envelops that object, it brings it in the form of a thought. That is called vritti, chitta vritti. So we don't know what an object is. All that we know is a thought in our mind. This is very important. Somehow we think there is an object. There is something, but we don't know what it is. Our consciousness goes and then it assumes the form of that particular object, brings it back in the form of a mould or an impression, and that's what we think knowledge. That is called knowledge. When consciousness comes into contact with an object, that process is called experience. And if it doesn't come into contact, there is no experience. When it comes into contact, say, I have an experience. And experience and the thought, the result that comes out of experience are so fast, we cannot distinguish between the experience and the resultant knowledge. If you say, I experience, don't say anything, then we have no problem. Yes. Do you get closely follow what I am talking? There is no problem, because, okay, this is an experience, I see you, there is nothing wrong. But the moment I take it and says, I know you, then there is a relationship developed, subject and object relationship. The relationship between our consciousness and our thought. So what is this? It is nice, it is ugly, it is small, it is big, it is desirable, it is undesirable. It is this which creates the problem. Now this problem need to be gotten rid of, not sorted out, but gotten rid of. According to Vedanta, even if you can what is called sort out the problem to the highest level, even then it will bind you. That is where the next chapter comes into play. Now it is called 14th chapter, Gunatraya Vibhaga Yoga. It is such a fascinating subject for many reasons. I will give you two reasons. We have to live our life and we have to live life with others. Now supposing you are alone in the room, then you don't have need to deal with the officers, with others. Or you are asleep. When you are asleep, if you have nightmare, whose problem is that? Your husband's or yours? It's nobody's problem. It's exclusively my problem. You can't blame your husband, because of you I am having nightmares. Unfortunately, you can't blame. It's possible that he is the cause. Both ways. Works both ways. But that is where subjectively we have to deal with our own problem. In spiritual life, this assumes even serious proportions, because in spiritual life the problem is not so much the outside world, mm-hmm. but it is our own mind. For that the Lord has started this. So this is the Sangati. What is the Sangati? 13th chapter deals with Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha has been elaborately described, especially in the second chapter, you know, with the nature of Atma. What is this? The fire cannot burn it, the weapons cannot destroy it, and what is called Nasato Vidyate Bhavo. Yes, the Atman is ever existent. Najayate Mriyate. It is neither born, therefore that which is not born cannot have death. That means it cannot go through all the Shad Vikara, the six changes that take place. To indicate that, the beginning and the end are indicated, so that whatever is in the middle also, it is included in that. Now there is no question of becoming old, no question of changing, no question of having disease, no question of going down the hill, because the hill is not there, so there is no need to go down. So that is indicated there. Beautiful descriptions have been given about the Atma. Now, about the Prakriti, we need some elaboration. And that's where this 14th chapter kicks in. Gunatraya Vibhaga Yoga. Now, according to Vedanta, very briefly, Vedanta heavily borrows from another school of philosophy called Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya is a system which is incomplete, inadequate, but there are certain elements in the Sankhya Yoga which have been bodily lifted and incorporated in the Vedanta system. So, just let me mention one fact. According to Sankhya, there are two eternal principles, that which is conscious and that which is unconscious. Both are eternal, but that is illogical. Consciousness and unconsciousness cannot coexist together. But at that time it was accepted. Prakriti, Purusha is only consciousness, Prakriti is completely non-conscious. Somehow they come together. And this whole mess starts. We are this world, what we call the world. And the world means we. The world is not outside, the world is within us. So we need to understand the nature of the Prakriti, because when we deal with external world, anything, this carpet, this chair, this microphone, other people, insects, animals, everything is made out of combination of gunas only, Prakriti, outcome of Prakriti. Now Prakriti, it consists of certain constituent elements. Now when we use the word guna, usually what we mean is quality. You know, this person is a good singer. That is a quality. This person is not a good singer. That is also a quality. Yeah, that sometimes that may be the best quality. Because if that person starts singing, yeah, you know, this person is a good cook and this person is not a good cook. So everything is constituted of three things. These are called gunas. As we know, what are those three gunas? Tamas, rajas and sattva. Now what's important, we know qualities means there is an object and that object manifests three separate qualities. This is our understanding. He's a beautiful person, he's a tall person, the flower is very fragrant, this flower has no fragrance. These are all enumeration of qualities. But what we need to understand is the very existence of an object is the outcome of these three qualities. And guna has these two meanings. Guna, the word guna has two meanings. Guna means a quality. Guna means rope. What is the function of a rope?
Bind.
To bind. That is why tamas also binds, rajas also binds, sattva also binds. All the three, according to Thakur, are robbers. Robbers. So we need to slowly overcome these three qualities. As I was mentioning, why do we need to understand? Because we are forced to deal with the outside, so-called outside world. Now, there are two things. That outside objects also have their own gunas. And our mind also is having three gunas. For example, take this example. Sri Ramakrishna is there. Now, Sri Ramakrishna, in which guna is more manifest in, say, Holy Mother or Sri Ramakrishna?
Sattva
guna. So, that sattva guna also, that is their nature. But rajaguna is there. Tamoguna is also there. Otherwise, they can never have sleep.
Yes.
If they didn't have tamoguna, they will suffer from
insomnia.
And if Holy Mother had no rajaguna, then you go there, she will feed you only with a smile.
Whereas for smiling also rajaguna is important.
Sattva. Yes. Smile, different smiles are there. Yeah. If a Ravanasura smiles, that is a different smile. When you are smiling, you know, I love you, at a chicken or turkey, dire consequences for the turkey. So, what is meant is, rajas is necessary, so that rajas is mixed with love, sattva. Therefore, she cooks for you, she feeds you lovingly. Every mother is having that sattvika love towards her child. That is why the child loves. That love of the child towards the mother, and that love of the mother towards the child, what quality is that?
Sattva.
Sattva quality. If it is tamas, the mother is having tamas, the child will never understand, because it has to manifest. So, what is the point we are making? That every object manifests certain quality. If our mind also manifests, so this example I was giving, Sri Ramakrishna always manifests sattva guna. Now, when people come into contact with Sri Ramakrishna, how do they estimate him? You know, there are examples. Once Sri Ramakrishna was going to a devotee's house, and he just was getting down from the carriage, and there was some drunkards, you remember. And Sri Ramakrishna was reeling when he was coming. He says, Bakub cage. He has taken a lot more than what he could digest. That was their interaction, their way. That means Sri Ramakrishna, in what condition he is, and how they are judging, that is why every object is looked by each one of us in a totally different way. Otherwise we should have always estimating an object exactly in the same way, but we do not do it. So, the point is, we cannot change the world. We can only change ourselves. But it is necessary to understand, because in the beginning, until we have the capacity to change ourselves, we should be away from certain things which manifest certain qualities which is not conducive to our own growth. That's why Sri Ramakrishna says satsanga, cultivate satsanga. So, if you cultivate dussanga, what is there? After all, I can also mix, everybody is God. Sri Ramakrishna gives that beautiful story. Mahatnarayana. It is to illustrate this. So we need, what is the point? When we are dealing with the external world, we have to understand which quality is getting, is manifested. So that we, if we don't have that discrimination, we will mix indiscriminately with anybody and anything, and thereby we harm our own selves. So that is why, how to find out what is the nature of this object is necessary. This is the understanding that comes in this chapter, and more especially in the 17th chapter. The second reason why we need to understand is, at certain stage of our spiritual life, the struggle is not with the outside world, but it is a struggle with our own mind. Then we have to study ourselves and find out what nature, what quality is manifesting. For example, don't think that I am criticizing devotees. You see, I am Samadarshi. I criticize everybody. Not only devotees. Devotees, non-devotees, Swamis, God, I criticize everybody, so I am a Samadarshi. Devotees claim that, Swamiji, what a wonderful meditation I had. Or sometimes they come and tell me to my face, your talk is so refreshing. The moment I started, you started, I was absorbed. And only when you ended the talk, you came back to consciousness. What are they talking?
Sleep.
Meditation. Oh, I had wonderful meditation. I did not know how time passed. Now the point is, how do you know what is happening to him? He might be absorbed in meditation, or he might be sleeping. How do we know? How do we know? Because whichever quality is manifest, it will have its effect. So by the effect, we know which quality is dominant in a particular object or person. So if a person says, I have wonderful meditation, but he gets angry, or he doesn't understand even the simplest of things, so what meditation he was having? Yeah. Even sleep has its own. Sattvika sleep, Rajasika sleep, and Tamasika sleep. Can you understand that? Sattvika sleep is that where the person, if at all he has few dreams, he has only pure sleep, and if at all he has dreams, those dreams will be full of divine objects, you know, temples or sadhus or things like that. But if he is a Rajasika sleep, then you know, this so many dreams, one after the other, making the mind more and more restless. What about Tamasika sleep? Can you understand what is Tamasika sleep? Tamasika sleep, usually you think he had what is called such a deep sleep, he did not know what. No, that is Sattvika sleep. What is Tamasika sleep? The fellow has bad dreams, what is called worldly dreams or nightmares, etc. Even sleep also affects us. We have to know, sleep also affects us. Why Sri Ramakrishna is advising us, at night you should eat very lightly, like jal khabar motam. Why? Because if a person eats heavily, then lot of undesirable things take place. His mind will not be under his control, digestion will not be all right, so many other things will happen. So everything that we do, waking state, dreaming state, anything that we do, it is what type of state that is, depending upon our quality that we exhibit. Now what is the point? We want to get rid of prakriti. To get rid of prakriti, what is prakriti? Consisting of
three gunas.
Therefore, how to overcome the prakriti? First, from the tamas is overcome by rajas, and rajas is overcome by sattva, and sattva is one goes even beyond the sattva. So this is how we overcome the bondage of the prakriti. It is all mental process. So what is spiritual progress? From tamas to rajas, rajas to sattva. So that is why we have to understand the nature of the, we have to understand, because we may be under the delusion that we are progressing spiritually, while in fact we are going down. This self-analysis is necessary. So, if I am progressing spiritually, I must be growing more and more in sattva guna. That means I enjoy God's name, I enjoy thinking of God, I talk with others, at least with myself. So, this is an interesting example. Just close your eyes and say, what are you talking with yourself? Record your own talk. You will understand what quality is dominant within each one of us. There you can't blame anybody else. Yeah, that fellow is talking bunk. Usually when we say that fellow is talking bunk, what we mean is he is not allowing me to talk. This is what we usually mean. But if that person allows me to talk, he is a very good person. See, how we do not understand even why we are reacting like that. Yeah, when we complain, Swamiji, see what type of devotee is there? He goes on talking. Half an hour he is complaining, how he is talking nonsense. Yeah, because the other devotees didn't allow him to talk. The poor Swami is the target. for him to talk. Just observe. You will get all this cinema. You don't need to go to any cinema. This is the most wonderful cinema you get. So, anyway, I would be very brief. I believe somebody had taken his 14th chapter. So this is the reason why is any object in this world is a combination of Prakriti and Purusha. What is yoga? Separation of Purusha and Prakriti. Actually, that is even that is not a very correct translation. The correct translation would be to sublimate the Prakriti also into
Purusha.
That is true Vedanta. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Everything is Brahma. Otherwise it gives the impression, I get out of this Ferris wheel. That means still the Ferris wheel exists. No, such a thing doesn't exist. What is Prakriti? It is like, what is a snake? It is a mistaken rope, is a snake. What is the world or Prakriti? The mistaken Purusha. So, if we really understand everything is a Purusha, then everything will be there, but the effect would be marvelous. I see everywhere only God and nothing else. Because that is the truth, that is the reality, that is the fact. Now that is to come to that state. So, certain descriptions are given of what is the nature of tamas, what is the nature of rajas, and what is the nature of sattva. But the point we have to, first point we have to understand is, even the substance itself is made out of Prakriti. We are assuming now Prakriti has a separate existence. Then we will come to the how do we know? In the very next chapter, which we are going to focus upon, the 15th chapter, he says, where from this world has come? I'll give you two examples. Urdhva Moolam Athashakam. The root of this world is above. Above means God, Purusha, God. The second is there, is Atmanaha Akashaha Sambhutaha. This Akasha has come out of Atman. Akasha Vayuhu. And Akasha gave birth to Vayu. Vayuhu Agnihi. From Vayu came Agni or fire. So, from Agni, Abhyaha, waters. Abhyaha Prithivi. Prithivi, prithiviyam, oshadhayaha, plants. Oshadibhyo, annam. Annat, purushaha. So purushaha means? Not that purushaha. All the things, all the plants. Yes, even plants also have purusha. You see that pollen? You know, if even that pollination, they call it, cross-pollination. So there also intense competition is there. Between two plants, intense competition is. One plant doesn't allow the other plant to come down and come up at all. Yeah, the old rogue is going on and on and on. The young one wants to have that job and it is not getting it. Yeah, so it prays to God, how long this old chap is going on and on. And then God, out of his mercy, sends a big, what is that, Isaac?
Oh, sorry.
And then this old chap is removed. And then the young one feels, thanks, thank God. And the new one. I'm not joking. The destruction through fire, through earthquake, through volcanoes, one side of it is destruction. The other side of it is
evolution.
Creation, new creation.
Creation.
Other things come up. Wonderful. Science is discovering something marvelous. There are black holes swallowing all the nearby planets. That is the what we call black side, down side. But there is a white side. What is the white side? On the other side, it is throwing up creation of new planets from the same destruction. That is why this Vedanta is so marvelous. It's compared like a circle. What is the speciality of circle? Every point in the circle is the beginning point, also the end point. If you look to one side, it is the beginning point. If you look to the other side, it is the end point. So, destruction is creation, creation is destruction. This process is continually going on and on and on eternally. That is why for Hindus, the time factor doesn't exist. This theory that it is a cycle, that's what is called Brahma Chakra. Like a wheel of Brahman, it is going on continually, revolving round and round. Srishti at the same time, Sthiti and Laya going on and on and on. So, even the black hole eating up the planets is the process of Laya which we see. But now scientists are able to see it is also the point of new creation. So if a tree dies, you know, actually seed. Seed means destruction of the tree in a way of speaking. New creation is starting. But new creation, the seed has to die before the plant can come up. And the plant has to die in the form of seed. This is continually going on and on, this process. So this is indicated here, Brahma Chakra. From Atman came Akasha. Akasha, Vayu. Vayu to Agni. Agni to water. Water to Prithivi. Prithivi to plants. Now, Prithivi is the end, bottom line. This is called from Akasha to Prithivi is called involution. From Prithivi, the plants would come. And what is happening? The plants become the insects, insects become, you see, birds, birds become animals, animals become human beings become saints, and they go back. This wheel is going on. So, what is the point of my this description? Why am I giving this division between Prakriti and Purusha is an artificial division. The subject-object division itself is a very artificial division. It works in our experience, but we have to go beyond this experience. Only when we develop that discrimination, we go beyond. And what is discrimination? To find out, discrimination really means to understand this is Purusha, this is Prakriti. To understand, who is understanding? The Purusha is understanding that I am the Purusha. What is the obstruction? Prakriti. And how does it obstruct? In the form of three gunas. So I have to sit back separately and say, oh, now I am feeling sleepy. While the Swami is talking, I am feeling sleepy. What guna is manifesting? Tamoguna. Then you get party, the Swami going on and on. And which quality is manifesting? Rajoguna. Oh, Swami is speaking wonderfully. Which guna is manifesting? Sattva guna. I think I'm happy. So, this is the process that is going on. Now, it's very simple. Chapter. It says all first thing is the constituent element of any object itself is three gunas. Now you understand Swamiji's words. I'm connecting. Each soul is potentially divine. And all knowledge is within oneself. Now all knowledge is within oneself. Going to school or learning from a book or from some experience is only bringing out which is already within, removing the obstructions, right? Now, can you connect this with the subject we are discussing? What is the quality manifestation of sattva guna?
Knowledge.
So when a person develops sattva guna, what does it do? The sattva guna removes the obstruction to knowledge. So the guna itself doesn't produce knowledge. It removes the obstacle to already the soul is full of knowledge. How does it do? It come out. Just imagine here is a window. Imagine now it is a bit dark. Imagine it is midday, 12 o'clock. So much light is there. You put a thick black curtain here. Do you see the light outside? Don't see. That is comparable to tamoguna. Tamoguna. Imagine another thin cloth, not so black, but at the same time not so white, then it is allowing some light to come in. As an example. So that is comparable to rajoguna. Imagine that it is a glass curtain. Then it obstructs, but its obstruction is the least. Now you see why what Swamiji is telling that what is this all knowledge is within. But if all knowledge is within, why is it that I am not having that knowledge? Because tamas and rajas are obstructing it. So imagine there is a student. And who is not tamasic, who is fully alert, and he is not rajasic. Fully alert, not at all alert is tamoguna. He is fully alert, as an example, it's not cut and dry department. It could be half alert, it could be how much has gone inside. Understand? How much has gone inside. Only the tail is removed. Like that. So, is rajoguna is just a little bit. But if he, this, imagine the student is fully alert but very restless. His alertness is not asleep, but his mind is moving very fast. So, what Sri Ramakrishna calls that coating on the film, if you shake the camera too much, how the film comes out? Aspashta, very indistinct. It is like that. Imagine a student, fully alert, listen to him, calm and quiet, paying complete attention. So alertness is one quality, but focusing on a subject is another quality. If these two qualities are combined, then that is sattva-guna. Then what happens? It doesn't produce knowledge, but it allows the knowledge to automatically, so you don't produce the light, but you remove the obstruction. So our knowledge is like that. Another example also we give. Imagine we are all sitting here and there is no light, complete darkness. What knowledge can we have of each other? Nothing, because we can't even see each other. But suddenly, light is put on. Now we have knowledge. Who is sitting where, how they are sitting, who they are, is it not? Now did the light produce knowledge? It didn't produce. Its function is only to reveal what is already there. Do you understand? Sattva is compared to a light. Sattva is also compared to some other things, which I will very briefly come. So, tamoguna covers the knowledge, or not only covers, it ulta what is called wrong understanding. That is called understanding. Understanding of a miss called misunderstanding. Yeah. That is the viparita jnana. Whereas rajoguna, it doesn't give wrong understanding, but it gives incomplete, inadequate, partial knowledge. That is why this rope and snake example can also be understood. When there is full sattva guna, the man will not mistake. That means if there is full light, you won't mistake the rope for a snake. If you are having full tamas, that means complete darkness, you don't see rope at all. There is no problem. But if there is rajoguna, some light is there, some darkness is there, then the problem comes. This is the knowledge. So, that is why three qualities are given. What is it? Tamas produces unhappiness, rajas produces mixed happiness, khatta mita. Not a good example because many people love khatta mita. Whereas sattva produces full knowledge, tamas produces full unhappiness. That is why, how does it produce? Through knowledge. First comes knowledge. And our happiness or unhappiness depends upon what? For knowledge. I like this. Okay, chalega. I don't like it at all. This is how, then first come these three qualities, what do they do? They allow certain amount of knowledge to come, and the result of that knowledge is either happiness or mixed happiness or unhappiness. This is one way of understanding. That's why he says sattvam sukhe sanjayati rajo ragatmakam vithi trishna sanga samutpavam. Whereas tamas, it makes him from nidra, pramada, etc. Sleep as well as mistakes. Only when a person is asleep, he commits mistakes. This is one description given. Also the consequences of it. When a tamasic person dies, jaganya guna vrittista, he is reborn in those creatures which live only in a lowest state of happiness. If a rajoguni, then so he is born in a mixed world. He experiences both happiness and unhappiness. Whereas this world, a person who has developed sattvika quality, then is urdhvam gacchanti sattvastha. Madhye tishtanti rajasaha, adho gacchanti tamasaha. This is the description given. So now, these two points. One is, the qualities are very, every object's very substance, the constituent elements, which makes that object, is consisting of these three gunas. And one of these gunas will be
dominant.
Yeah. Now, even the simplest thing, let me give an example. Even a carpet. Carpet could be tamasic carpet, rajasic carpet, and sattvic carpet. A chair can be tamasic chair, rajasic chair, and sattvic chair. Can you understand that?
Yes.
So what is it? It is a kind of wood, and it is made in... I am not talking about how it is made by a carpenter. By its very nature, it is not a very good wood. And it produces bad smell. And it is maybe very not strong, very fragile. You are always frightened to even to sit. But tamasic chair, tamasic carpet is also like that, the material out of which it comes. And then there is not so bad, not so good, so-so, it is all right. But if it is a sattvika carpet, what happens? The moment you step on it, your mind becomes, how do we know? By its effect upon us. Every object, a good, a bad tree, a mixed tree, and also a very good tree. Do you follow what I am talking about? See, take another example, mango. There are three types of mango. One is you cannot even touch it. Another is, okay, it's all right. Another is absolutely delicious. Flavor, color, the taste, the shape, everything. This is a please. It pleases. You see the point? So every object, if you see, even a harmonium, three harmoniums is there. So what is, how do you know? The tamasic harmonium? if you press one of these reeds, it will give another one. So if it is rajasic, then it is not complete. If it is sattvic, it's very sweet, gives correct this thing, it needs less correction, etc., etc. Now you can, sattvika cooking, rajasika food. I'm not talking the cooking, talking about the material itself. Everything, every object in this world, one particular good tamasic animal, rajasic animal, and sloth is considered as a tamasic animal. And you know, a tiger, a lion is considered as a rajasic. Whereas a cow, according to Hindu tradition, is considered to be sattvic. Even milk, buffalo milk is considered to be very, no. Tamasic. Tamasic. Cow's milk is considered very sattvic. This is just a few examples. This is the what is called very constituent element. Then through cultivation we can manifest that quality. This is what is called breeding. Can you see? A wild animal is now converted through successive generations of intelligent breeding into something most wonderful thing. You can breed, say, a sheep dog, or, you know, very cute, it looks at you and you are done for. You see? You know, the small one, it looks at you in such a way that you are done for. Whatever, there are so many. Yeah. This is one way of understanding it, that there is through gunas, in the secondary sense, we manifest. So what does education do? So the constituent element is there. Now what the education or culture, what it does is to bring out the respective qualities, and that is what education is supposed to do, right? So when we see this person is a wonderful singer, now, nobody can make a person a wonderful singer unless by constitution he has the good qualities, the voice, the lungs, the constitution, etc. Then through training, that particular quality is made to shine more and more. Now, do you see what I am driving at? One, constituent gunas. Second, manifestation of certain qualities. So the whole universe is both constitutionally and manifestedly also through long training or habit, etc. These gunas are manifest. What is the point of this discussion in the whole 14th chapter is that when we should know how do we recognize which quality belongs to or manifests which type of manifestations. If it produces right knowledge, it is sattva. If it produces mixed knowledge, it is. If it produces wrong or opposite knowledge, that is the nature of. So that once we know how to recognize, then our next step will be how to slowly improve from tamas to rajas to sattva. Now this is important not only for spiritual people, it is also important for worldly people. Why? When we classify some people as worldly people, do you mean to say that they don't want to be happy? Worldly people, do they want to be happy or not?
Yes.
They also want to be happy. But if they want to be happy, then what should they do? So, which quality gives happiness?
Sattva.
Sattva quality only gives happiness. What does the raja quality do? Rajas do? Mixed means it makes a person restless. If the person voluntarily develops tamo guna, then what happens?
Unhappiness.
What is the example? When a person thinks, oh, it is life is too hard, I want to forget about it. He takes to drugs. What is he doing? Which quality he is developing? The same person, if he drinks or takes too much coffee or goes on doing all these midnight dance and all those things, which quality is developing? Rajoguna. But if he really wants to be happy, he wants to be happy. There is no question. But what is his understanding? How do I become happy? Do I become happy by taking drugs? Do I become happy by doing all these drinking and other things? Or do I become happy by developing my sattvika quality? You can see it, even among ourselves. Even though we are devotees, we have not yet become. Our goal is to become devotees. But what do? We have to be careful what type of lifestyle we are developing consciously. So, that is why it is important. Even our next life also is determined by which quality we develop. Or to put it in a more philosophical way, when pure tamasic quality is manifest, it manifests only one quality of God. What is that?
Sat.
The carpet exists.
Oh.
The plant exists. The rock exists. You cannot deny the existence of that object. That is why when we say, is this also God? Yes, it is also God. Then God must have three qualities. What are those three qualities?
Sat,
Chit and Ananda. So how can this carpet be God? It is God, but two qualities of God are non-manifest. They are there, but because you cannot separate Sat and Chit and Ananda. So when only the tamoguna is manifest, the other two qualities are there. Rajoguna is also there. Sattvaguna is also there. But what is it manifesting? Tamoguna. When tamoguna dominates, the sat aspect of God is more manifest. It exists. Now, when rajoguna manifests, two qualities get manifested. Not one. Sat and chit means
knowledge.
Because for a rajoguni, activity. And activity needs knowledge.
Yes.
I want to go here. I want to do that. Without knowledge, the activity will not come. But it is not complete knowledge. That is why his ananda also is mixed ananda. I am giving a general classification. Because there are infinite varieties, mixers among these. Combinations are there. But when a person develops sattvika quality, it becomes dominant. Then that sattvika quality manifests all the three qualities. Sattva in its purest sense, and chit also in its purest sense, and ananda also in its purest sense. So this is how we have to understand the three qualities, gunas, called sattva, rajas and tamas. Now the point is that all the prakriti is limited, whereas purusha is unlimited. Prakriti is jada, non-conscious. I am talking from the lower point of view. But the next 15th chapter will tell there is not really, these two are not separate, because the prakriti has come only from purusha. If the prakriti has come from purusha, then it must manifest only the nature of the purusha only. So that reconciliation has taken in the Bhagavad Gita. We get it in the 7th chapter. What is the 7th chapter, if you guys still remember? 7th chapter, it says, I have two natures, a lower nature and a higher nature. So the lower nature is called, there is Panchabhutas, etc. My higher nature is called pure consciousness. The same truth is again re-emphasized in the 15th chapter. That is why I will come to that when I give the introduction. I will do that. That's why he says that my whole nature can be divided into three: Kshara and Akshara and Purushottama or Uttama Purusha. Kshara and Akshara and Uttama Purusha. But I will lead to that. Now, what is the point? I am summarizing in this class that the whole of our life is a mixture of Purusha and Prakriti, subject and object, knower and the known. So our life is the result of that known. When the knower and the known get combined, what is the result?
Knowledge.
Knowledge. And what knowledge we have, that dictates what type of habits we have, what type of thoughts we have, and as a result, what type of experience we have. I am not talking about knowledge experience. I am talking about the resultant of knowledge experience in the form of happiness and unhappiness. If a person says, I am unhappy, he should not blame the world, because it is his fault. He is not manifesting his sattva quality. Because even death loses its sting. When a person has sattvika knowledge, he says there is no death. Where a person sees death, a sattvika person sees only a new life. How, you know, this Socrates, he was dying. You know how he died?
By getting poison.
Yeah, voluntarily. He need not have taken poison. What a great philosopher he was. He was in prison. It is the charge, he was corrupting the youth. That was the charge exactly against Sri Ramakrishna. He is spoiling the Mata Kachi. He is eating the heads of all the young people. They are not getting married and they are becoming monks. Yeah, this was the charge against Sri Ramakrishna. Because whoever goes there, he says, oh, don't get married. So he was being blamed. There was an incident, you know. One of our Swamis was sitting in front of an ashrama. A wedding party was going on. Bride and bridegroom were being taken in procession. The wedding has not, they were not wed. They were going to the wedding hall. His Swami shouted, hey, stupid fellow, even now there is time, run.
Which is true. So, what is the point we are making? If we analyze our life, two factors we see. One factor is that all of us have to go through have both happiness and unhappiness. No one is always happy, no one is always unhappy. It is a mixture. But in this mixture, we can clearly find some people are generally more happy than other people. You will see all sorts of varieties. What is it due to? The particular quality dominant within each one of us. And it is, I also mentioned, we have to deal with outside world. And when we come across with outside world, that includes everybody. Wives have to deal with husbands, husbands have to deal with wives, parents have to deal with children, friends have to deal with friends, with everybody, or colleagues or employees have to deal with other employees and employer, all these fall under that category. So much of suffering is generated. Why is it due to? You know why is it due to? Simplest answer is due to differences in the gunas. Due to differences in the guna. One boss is Sattvika boss. No work is done. Another boss is
Rajasi.
Lots of work is done. Another is Tamasik. Tamasik, no. That fellow, he will put pressure and he will enjoy, but he will torture his, mercilessly, he will torture his employees and then take it out. So you can see this difference. And then we are specially talking about spiritual progress. We read Bhagavad Gita because of spiritual progress. Now when we are talking about spiritual progress, the point we have to understand is we do not have the capacity to change anybody. We can only change ourselves. But to change ourselves, we have to accept first the situation. And to accept the situation, we have to understand why is this person behaving? Because he is a slave to that particular guna. That's why a person is very angry. Imagine, oh, this person is intolerable. Yes, that is true. But why is he that like that? Why is he like that? Because he is dominated by that particular guna. The moment you understand, a madcap, extreme example, a madcap shouts at you. Would you take offense? No, you don't take offense. But if a so-called, according to you, not mad person shouts at you, then you become very angry with him. But actually when he is shouting at you, is he mad or not? No. Temporarily, anybody who is angry, he is temporarily mad. Yeah, because he doesn't know what he is doing. Is it not? Some people, they have this, they are constantly angry because of some guna dominates in them. If we understand it, then we accept it and say, okay, this poor fellow, what can he do? I will give you an example. You know, Pratap Chandra Hajra, he disturbed Thakur. Oh, all your visions, everything is hallucinations. Then he went to the mother. And mother said that if it is hallucination, how come they are coming true? This is an important point I will deal now itself. How do you know that a person is having, claims, I am having visions of God? How do we know whether he is hallucinating or not? How do we know?
How does it affect on people?
This is where the gunas come in. If that person is not hallucinating, he is having real visions of God,
then he must be having which guna?
Sattva.
If he is having sattva guna, what would be his behavior?
Happy.
First of all, he will be most happy. Not only that, there is something we usually ignore. If you come near a happy person, happiness is infective.
Yes.
It will make us also happy. Have you noticed?
Yes.
If you go to a person who is restless, you become restless. Yeah. You know, just we don't observe things. That's why I'm forced to demonstrate it. Yeah. Really. You know, supposing a visitor comes to you, he makes an appointment, he comes to you, you welcome him, and he is going on doing like half an hour until the talk lasts, is going on doing like this. How do you feel? You feel restless. How soon can I get rid of this fellow? Don't you feel instinctively? So he is indirectly infecting you with his quality. That is why if you cultivate satsanga, then the satsanga will infect you and make you a better person. Is it not?
Yes.
Is it? Sri Thakur says, if the satsanga doesn't have that effect,
then it's not
satsanga. Then the satsanga is not going to help you at all. Dussanga has its own effect, satsanga has its own effect. This is the truth. So, if you come across a person who is very happy, then he will make you also happy. That means sattva quality is present in him. Then, second point you have to understand, sattva quality produces what?
Happiness.
But happiness comes because of what?
Knowledge.
What knowledge? Sattvic knowledge. What is sattvic knowledge? So, when you come across such a person, when you live in the company of such a person, he will give you right knowledge. Since he has right knowledge, he will also infect you with right knowledge. And when you have right knowledge, then you will know what to do, what not to do. And you, with your own experience, you will know that, oh, how can a madcap, a stupid fellow who is hallucinating, gives you right knowledge? Is it possible? That is how we will know who is hallucinating and who is not hallucinating. So if a person is genuinely having God vision, you may not understand his God vision, but you will understand through the effect. You are becoming a better person. You are becoming a happier person. Even ordinary things you do like that. You know, you hear two people singing same song, and one person sings much better way. You are also enthused to sing in that way. If you come to know the other person is not singing properly, you won't feel inspired by it. Have you not noticed it?
Yes, ma'am.
It is inspiring. So if this ordinary life it can happen, why not? That is why a good leader, you know, this is another example. A good leader, real leader, and he inspires so many people. In any field, he may be good actor, may be good singer, may be good teacher, may be good worker, anybody. So that is how we know through the manifestation of the quality. How do you know who is hallucinating and who is not hallucinating?
The effect.
Yeah. Even if you don't accept this argument, if the worst comes to the worst, what does it matter? The fellow is making you happy. Does it matter whether he is hallucinating? If you can hallucinate in a better way, what else you want? Anyway, everything is hallucination. Why not have happy hallucination? Yeah.
Pankaj, question.
Yeah, first let me put this.
Okay, perfect.
Even God vision is a hallucination. So before we attain to that hallucination, that is reality. But once we come to that hallucination, then we have to destroy that hallucination, that vritti. That is why Sri Ramakrishna ultimately Totapuri came and said, destroy that hallucination of the Divine Mother also. He is killing Mother Kali, no. He is killing the vritti of the Mother Kali, the reflection of Mother Kali, so that the mirror will not come in between mother and oneself. If the vritti is not there, the subject and object, what happens to them?
One.
Becomes one. That is the idea. So, now what is your question?
Swamiji, which quality predominates is determined by karma, right?
Yes, because this guna, in this sense, produces knowledge. Knowledge produces desire. Desire translates into
action.
This is the inevitable consequence. You will not do something unless you have some idea what you want to do. Why? You may not know why you want to do it, but invariably you have some idea, I have to do this. And some vague idea is there, why you want to do that. Ultimately, why you want to do? Because you want to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
This is the simple truth. So, first knowledge, jnana shakti produces Ichha Shakti. Ichha Shakti produces Kriya Shakti. These three qualities. In Tantra it is beautifully dealt with, but we will not go into this. That's why, but very briefly he deals, this Sattvaguna produces Sattvic knowledge. Sattvic knowledge produces Sattvic type of
action,
activities. And we do not know which quality that person is having, but by studying the activities, what type of food he is eating, what type of yajna he is doing, what type of charity he is doing, what type of puja he is doing, by studying those activities, we infer if these activities and the knowledge and the quality are interrelated. This is how we have to start. So, we have to start to change ourselves. Progress means sattva to tamas to rajas, rajas to sattva, and finally by God's grace go beyond all the three qualities. Sattva, beyond sattva. That's why Thakur illustrates so beautifully in this form of story, three robots. What is important, how do we change our quality? Tamasic quality. So how do we do that? In the 17th chapter, when we have, if we have opportunity, we will deal with it. It's a beautiful chapter. For all the chapters in the Bhagavad Gita, I think the most practical chapter is 17th chapter. So he divides, the Lord divides human life predominantly into four type of activities. Ahara, food. Then yajna, worship. Then dana, charity. And then finally tapas, austerity. So food, worship, charity and austerity. So this can be divided into sattvika and rajasika and tamasika. He gives elaborate explanations. Now, by changing our food, by changing the way we worship, in fact, there is such a wonderful chapter, I tell you. Even why does somebody choose a bhuta, a ghost, for worshipping? Who do you think will choose a bhuta for worship?
Tamasic.
The tamasic person. If he is a sattvika person, he will only choose either Lord Vishnu or Devi or Shiva, like that. So that indicates what type of person. Bhuta preta ganams chanya yajante tamasa jana. How wonderful it is. But those who are endowed with sattva guna, they only worship me, is what the Lord is telling. So, we will deal when the chapter comes. What is important is here that by studying our activities, we can infer what type of knowledge, because all activities spring from what? From the knowledge. And all knowledge springs from what? From the guna. You understand? You know, if you study superficially, sattva produces knowledge. So, rajas doesn't produce knowledge. Tamas also doesn't produce knowledge. That's a wrong type of understanding. Sattva produces sattvika knowledge, rajas produces rajasic knowledge, tamas produces tamasika knowledge. Similarly, sattva produces sattvika happiness, rajas produces rajasika happiness, tamas produces tamasika happiness. In fact, Sri Ramakrishna goes to the extent of, there are three types of bhakti. Sattvika bhakti, rajasika bhakti and tamasika bhakti. You may wonder that which type of bhakta I am. When I am doing japa meditation, what type of bhakta quality I am manifesting? No. Sri Ramakrishna has given an entirely different interpretation. A tamasika bhakta is one. I am just telling you, though it is not in context now, that a tamasika bhakta is not having tamasika nature. But his bhakti is manifest in a tamasika form. That means tremendous faith and say, you are my mother, I will rob you. Whom else do I rob? Excepting my own mother. I claim my heritage and with strong will. That is what he is referring. Whereas a rajasika bhakta, he wants to show all, you know, gold and ornament, you know, here gold, there gold, and in between Japamala there is some gold. Golden bead is there. And if he has to fill his teeth, in between he will have that golden. He said, these are emergency, what is called resources. Emergency, you know, you go to Spain and stuck in a hotel. No problem at all, no need to send any email. That is rajasika bhakta. Whereas a sattvika bhakta, he doesn't show any outward show. He is totally absorbed in God. He doesn't care what type of dwelling, what type of food, what type of dress. People may even mistake him, but he doesn't care. So, that is a different interpretation. We are not talking about that. So, by our activities spring from knowledge. Our knowledge springs from a particular guna. By studying our activities, we know what type of knowledge we have. By studying our knowledge, we know what type of guna dominates in us. Though we know intellectually, we cannot change our quality. We can't change our knowledge. But the least, easiest thing to change is our activity. So start changing the activity, even though it may be painful, but slowly it will change our knowledge and slowly it will also change our guna. I'll give one small illustration for this. Suppose there is a tamasic person. He eats tamasic food. So what does he do? When he takes up the gospel of Ramakrishna, he will be sleeping. Then he decides, I want to become a better devotee. Then what does he do? It is advised, you eat sattvika food. Then he eats maybe a bit of boiled rice and some milk and he has it. Now you see what happens. He will not feel so sleepy. Food may not be tasty, but he will not, his mind is not affected by the tamasic quality of the food. It is light food. And it keeps him alert. Then he reads the gospel understands it in a better way, and then for a short time he is in that sattvika quality. So if he goes on following this routine, in course of time the sattvika quality becomes habitual and dominant. See how it works? So this is only one example. Suppose there is a person, and because of his food he is very soon overcome by anger and impatience, etc. Suppose he eats this food, that gives him a little bit of, wee bit of control. Then if some unpleasant situation comes, he doesn't react as he used to do in the past. He does it in a milder way. Then he understands, when he behaves milder way, the other person also behaves in a positive way. When he behaves in a positive way, his fellow is a bit happy. Then he understands. Then slowly, 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 the things will change. So this is how, by changing our activity, we change our knowledge. By changing our knowledge, we change our guna. That is why our so much of, at the end of the second chapter, Arjuna specifically asks, what does he ask? Sthita prajnasya ka bhasha samadhistasya kesava sthita dhi kim prabhasheta kim asita prajit. What type of manifestation we can see in a man of wisdom? How does he talk? How does he sleep? How does he react, act and react? So a whole litany of descriptions follow. This follows everywhere. 12th chapter Bhagavad Gita. Who is my devotee? He who stays calm and quiet, mana and apamana. Then he says, etu dharmya amrutamitham yathoktam pariupasate. This is called amrita. What type of amrita? Nectar? Dharmya amrutam. He gives the graphic descriptions. Even 13th chapter gives a graphic description. So now we will summarize what we have spoken. What is it? The sangati between 13th chapter and 14th chapter. What is the connection? At 13th chapter ends, every object in this world is the result of combination of Purusha and Prakriti. Now what is Prakriti? Prakriti. Consciousness is only one. But Prakriti is divided into three gunas. And as I said, guna means both the constituent element and also the specially manifested quality. I brought out the connection. How? What is a quality? It is only bringing its own constituent element more into manifestation. If a fragrant flower is there, fragrance is always already manifest there. But when certain conditions are fulfilled, that particular quality becomes more manifest. Like a baby, if he is not sent to school, then most likely he will remain illiterate and not manifest. It's the truth. But the same, if he is given opportunity, he may become a doctor, he may become engineer, he may become a great person, is it not? So the quality which comes out as a result of refinement is what we usually call good quality, bad quality. But constitutionally, that person must have that quality already inherent, otherwise it cannot come out. Apple seed can never produce, never become a mango. A mango seed never becomes an apple seed. Understand? That is why, Swami, it is important to understand, each soul is potentially divine. That means our very constituent element is divinity. But that divinity is manifesting in the form of three gunas, tamas, rajas and sattva. So how do you manifest? What is the second sentence?
Knowledge.
The goal is to manifest this divinity within by controlling nature, external and
internal.
What does it mean? It means
you overcome tamas by rajas, overcome rajas by sattva, and these three do not produce your divinity, but they remove the obstacles to the manifestation of divinity already inherent within. That is the meaning. And do this either by is karma yoga, bhakti, whatever it is, you know that. That is how we have to understand. So the sangati here is that tamas produces completely opposite knowledge. Opposite knowledge or wrong knowledge produces always the consequences, terrible misery, suffering, unhappiness. And rajas produces mixed knowledge, a little bit wrong knowledge, a little bit right knowledge, and the result of it is sometimes a little happy, sometimes a little unhappy, mixed happiness. And sattva produces correct knowledge, and correct knowledge produces absolute happiness. Just as an illustration, you know, we all complain, oh, it is too cold. Winter season, it is too cold. Summer season, it is too hot. What do you expect out of winter season?
Cold.
Do you expect summer heat in winter season? Or do you expect cold in summer season? Winter season is winter season. Summer season is summer season. Once you understand that, really understand that, then you accept it and say winter is winter, summer is summer. This is the essence of Zen philosophy. One Zen master was very happily sitting. Somebody went and asked, what is the secret of your happiness? He simply said, when it is summer, I say it is summer. When it is winter, I say it is winter. That is the secret of my happiness. Beautiful philosophy. What is he telling? I know this is summer, and this is what you have to expect of
summer.
I know this is winter, this is what to expect of winter. So, if we have this kind of knowledge, yes, here is a bad person. Okay, he is a bad person. What is the point of, once you have to know, he is a bad person. After that, you accept and then find out how either you want to run away or some method by which you don't need, you are not affected so much. Something can come only after, but if you accept that when is this fellow going to become a sattvic fellow, he is never going to, because this change will never come.
Outside.
May come, may not come, but it is not in your control.
Yeah.
That is why Sri Ramakrishna says, this is the nature of the world. What is the nature of the world? There will be happiness, there will be unhappiness. That is why Sri Krishna tells, Bhagavad Gita is such a marvelous scripture because he says, Matra sparshast kaunteya sitoshna sukha dukkada agama paino anitya tam titikshasva bharata. He says, bear, put up with this happiness and unhappiness, the outcome of cold and heat, and reverence and insulting, etc., etc. He doesn't say, by my grace, nobody will insult you. You will never experience severe winter. You will never experience severe summer. He never said that. He says, you will experience exactly the same things. But what is the difference? The difference is titikshasva, that you bear it. You accept it and you bear it. Once you bear it, then it becomes a spiritual practice. He never said, I will always make you happy in this world. He always said that I will make you happy in the other world. Other world means not Swargaloka. Other world means knowledge of Brahma. But in this world, so long as you have a body, so long as there is a mind, you will have to go like anybody else. Sri Ramakrishna said, this is the nature of body. It becomes old, it will have disease. Is it not? Others were telling, sir, you pray to mother, and get rid of your cancer and all that. He refused to do that. Why? Because he said, this is the nature of the world. Mm-hmm. He has to die through some way, he has to die. Mm-hmm. Suppose he doesn't die. What a problem.
What?
If Sri Ramakrishna doesn't die, suppose he doesn't die. So what do you expect him to be?
You go on freeing souls.
What? No, he is going, growing old. That means you have to expect him, he will not become old also.
Yeah.
He always remains very young. And you know what happens? You will come across Sri Ramakrishna. Do you know what happens?
It's that we get a lot of slacks.
But then obviously
he will suffer. Because if he doesn't change, he will also not change. Don't you understand? If he doesn't change, you will not also change. That means eternal life. That is not a desirable position at all. That's why it is better that he also gone, better that we also go. Yeah. I'm not joking. It's not easy to be in the presence of Sri Ramakrishna. You know, we think how wonderful it will be. No, he is not. He was very, very harsh and strict. He said, what, you have come to sleep? Get up at midnight. And then you go to the Rockwell, come back at midnight, you go to Sri Ramakrishna and say, I am going to sleep. He said, what, you have come here only to sleep? Sit and meditate. What a painful experience, life experience. After that you will never again go to him. Yes, I am not joking. It is not easy to be with a saint. It is far easier to be with a worldly person rather than a saint, because a saint demands saintliness from others. What we want is, we want to be saints without being a saint. We want the result of saintliness without becoming a saint. That is not possible. So this is the sattva rajasam. Sattva produces true knowledge and true happiness. Rajas produces mixed knowledge and mixed happiness. Tamas produces wrong knowledge and wrong happiness, or unhappiness, or terrible suffering. This is always the truth. Since all of us want happiness, we have to develop right knowledge. And right knowledge is right happiness actually. That is a subject by itself. But very briefly I will tell you. When you say I am happy, it is not because of an object. An object is a cue. This really, an object is only a cue. But if you are determined that I will be happy, then you will be happy whatever be the object. And if I can acquire that kind of status, it doesn't matter what the condition of the world is. How do we know? Sri Ramakrishna was always happy. Why was he always happy? Because he is knowledge. He has produced his own knowledge. What is that knowledge? I am happy all the time. So nothing could shake him, really speaking. So that's a great lesson for us to learn, that you don't become happy because something changes in your favor. You become happy because you change your idea about that object in your favor. This is the truth. That is called spiritual knowledge. Nothing happens outside. It's exactly the same world. I have given lot of illustrations. The outside object being the same, our interpretation of that object is what makes that object what we think it is. Do you get the point?
Yes.
Outside object is not a particular object because it is a particular object. It becomes a particular object because we decide what type of object it is.
I know I have given this illustration, but again very briefly I will give you. Suppose here is an object. This is an object. Don't say it is a chair. Just say it is an object. Now ask a woodworm, what is this? What does it say?
Food.
Food. Ask a human being or a carpenter, what is it? What does he say? It is a beautiful chair. Ask a physicist with a powerful electronic microscope. What does he say this is?
Atoms
and molecules or particles, whatever you call it, energy. Ask Sri Ramakrishna what this
God.
He says it is God. Now what is it? What is this object? What you decide, that is what it is. Is it not true? So it is one of the delusions, is an object is an object, because that is that. That is a delusion for us. It never works. Even in ordinary words also, ordinary experience also, it doesn't work. Again I gave you the illustration. Here is a woman going, a young woman going in the street. A small child playing and he runs. Mummy, mummy, this is my mom. And another young man goes there. He says, my sister, where are you going? An old man is going and he says, my daughter, oh, you are going this way. Another young woman says, this is a beautiful woman. One object, but four different views. Imagine Sri Ramakrishna is meets her. What do you think he will say?
The Divine Mother.
Not only this, a prostitute was standing, and what did he say? I saw Mother Sita waiting for Sri Rama. A woman is waiting for customers. In his eyes, Mother Sita is waiting for Sri Ramachandra. What a vision. Which is correct? Which is correct? Only Thakur's vision is correct. All other are wrong views. Why do we say they are wrong views? Because there is a proof. What is that proof? Or measuring rod. A view that is liable to change is a wrong view. A view which never changes, that is real view. Everything else is unreal view. So when we say this world is unreal, do you understand now what is the meaning of unreality? The object is not unreal. Our view about that object is unreal. Why is it unreal? Because it is going on changing. Today I say this, tomorrow I say something else, and after tomorrow I say still something else. But one day I will tell something, and after that, for eternity, I do not change my view. Do you understand now? So long as we go on changing our views, the world is unreal. In that sense, the world is not unreal, but my view of the world is unreal. When I have real view, that means it will never change, then I know the world is also real. You understand? What does it mean when the world is real? That means you see only God. You do not see anything else. And you never change after that, because there is nothing else to change. This is the meaning of unreality. We go on struggling. As Sri Ramakrishna says, world is unreal. But I see it is more than real. This conflict is going on. We do not understand that there is no unreal. First of all, unreal thing never exists. It can exist in words. It cannot exist in fact. Words, beautiful words, it exists. You know what is the example? You know, for example, Yesterday noon, I had lunch with the son of a barren woman. Yesterday, I had lunch with the son of a barren woman. Perfect sense? No, words. Words, correct words. But such a thing doesn't exist in fact. So that is why this world is not unreal. If there is unreality, it is unreality like the son of a barren woman. How can we experience it? You can't experience it. So it must be something real. But my understanding of that real world is very unreal. You see the point? So problem is, that's why rope and snake. The rope, and again that's a beautiful illustration. Sorry, I'm taking time, but it's important to understand. A rope, what is a snake? Nothing but? In reality, what is it? So the reality of the snake is nothing but rope. The reality of the snake is really nothing but the rope. There is nothing wrong with the rope. But where is the snake?
Inside my head.
It is inside my head. So beating the rope is not going to do any good. Beat the head of the fellow. There he will understand. The snake will go. That is the truth about it. These Vedantic truths are so marvelous, really speaking. So what is now, to wrap up, what is this guna's business? Lead tamas is dense darkness or unreality. Rajas is mixed reality. Sattva is real reality. So the journey is from the unreal to the real. That is why asatoma sadgamaya, tamasoma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. It's beautiful. Abhyaroha mantras. The first prayer is asat to sat. That is a sat aspect. Tamas to jyoti. That is ignorance to knowledge. The third, the word mrityu here, mrityu indicates fear. Fear means unhappiness. That's why mrityu is, otherwise already sat and asat has come. So you should not understand mrityu from the sense of, you know, this non-existence to existence. You have to understand from nirananda to ananda. Let me manifest. Let me see sat. Let me see the chit. Let me see the ananda. Sat, chit, ananda. And we also discussed tamas covers chit and ananda. Rajas covers ananda. And sattva only covers the reality, but it gives all the three, but a very thin covering. That's why sattvam sukhe sanjayati. It is also bondage, but sattva reveals the most. But when it goes away, how it is, you know? Again, I don't want to take too much time, but if there is a pot and the real sun is reflecting, so if the water is very clear, then the reflection of the sun also is
clear.
Very clear. But however clear it is, it is only a reflection. So even that reflected sun also is capable of illumining to a limited extent. But nothing can substitute the real sun. So that is how we have to understand tamas, rajas and we have to go beyond these three. Or even to put it in simpler words, we have to understand Prakriti in its real nature as none other than Purusha himself. In order to make us understand the detailed description of this sattva, rajas and tamas is given in the 14th chapter.
Now naturally, how do we go beyond these three gunas to understand? How do we understand Prakriti as Purusha? How do we understand? Now we are understanding it as separate from Purusha.
Mm-hmm.
Now how do we understand it is none other than Purusha? Because if the seed is apple seed, the tree must be
apple.
If the seed is mango, it must be a mango. What is the point of this illustration? Very important. The apple will never ever become a mango. The mango will never ever become an apple. If we are divine, we have no choice but to become divine. If we are non-divine, there is any amount of hypnotization is not going to make us divine. So what is the point here? If the Prakriti is the outcome of Purusha, then the Prakriti is, however it may appear as non-Purusha, it is nothing but potentially divine. That is why we are also Prakriti, but our Prakriti's potential divinity is there. Not only in human beings, even this carpet also is potentially divine only. Do you get the connection now? Tamoguna is covering its other aspects. Rajoguna is covering one aspect. Sattvaguna is slightly covering all the three gunas. So, but it is nothing, but for these gunas, every object is nothing but. Now that illustration, that what is this object? A woodworm, a carpenter, and a physicist. Now you see, what is the beauty of it? When a physicist takes an electronic microscope and looks at this table, what we call table, what does he see?
Energy.
Okay, energy, particles, atoms. When he looks at the other object, what does he see? When he see whichever object, what does he see? That means he has already overcome the distinction between one object and the other object. Now, there is no distinction between living and non-living. There is no distinction between human beings and non-human beings. There is no distinction between any object, from the highest saint to the lowest molecule. It is nothing but energy. Even that is physical concept. Just imagine, if a person becomes spiritual, then what happens? The distinction is destroyed. When the distinction is destroyed, the many is destroyed. The manyness is destroyed, what remains?
One.
That one. But actually, technically speaking, you cannot even call it.
Yes.
Many and one are relative relationship they have. That means I am. It is to lead us to that. Is it true? You said that Prakriti and Purusha are different. No, I didn't say that. Prakriti and Purusha have the cause and effect relationship. And what do you mean by that? Purusha is the cause, Prakriti is the karya. Karana, karya, samparka is there. So what is that karana? That karana is none other than Purusha. And that Purusha is, that is why in the 15th chapter, which we are going to take from tomorrow morning, that's why the whole universe has come from
Purusha.
God. That's why Urdhamulam Adashaka Ashvatam Prahuravyayam Chandamsi Esya Parnan Estam Veda Sa Vedavit. He who knows this is a true knower of Vedas. That means he is a true knower. We will discuss it tomorrow onwards. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So until the call comes, how much time?
Five minutes.
Okay.
10-15 minutes. Okay. No, you see, when he says, she says 5 minutes, it is not the time zone, you know. American time zone. And then what is that? Chicago time zone or San Francisco time zone. Which time zone she is referring, you have to clarify that. Okay, somebody can sing some nice song.
What did she can sing?
Gaan karo. Karo, karo, karo. Lajja bhai ghrina tate naay. Oi, oi, oh, it is that, thawe. You give it to her, so that it will be better. No, you don't need to strain.